Attempt blocked by McNabb to the right circle. A try. Kick save Hill. Rebound. Another try save Hill. A third try save. And the rebound to the right corner.
Nobody is ever satisfied with one. So we're back for a second hour of the Vegas Golden Knights Insider Show.
Bob boots it ahead. Sticks it left. Barbashev in. Back to the right. A shot. Score! Marchessault. 19 seconds in.
From the Finley Chevrolet Fox Sports Las Vegas studio and live at lvsportsnetwork.com, here is Darren Millard and Ryan Wallace.
Rolling along here, hour number two of the VGK Insider Show. And the VGK Insider Show is brought to you by the Dollar Loan Center, where your first loan is on us. Apply for free at don'tbebroke.com to get up to $5,000. It's Ryan Wallace, Chris Chapman, and we bring in the esteemed Darren Millard.
Esteemed again? That's back, yeah, back days, yeah. I've been esteemed. I thought might
look
like,
at you
be watered down a little bit too.
No,
the available or the present or the decided to show up or something along that line.
This guy, yeah. Darren Millard.
There's somebody here along that line. How are you guys getting along with this road trip that just wrapped up with 7 of 8 points and being able to rip through what was a grinding trip? Like the overall time led to time tied, and then you factor in some time trailing, was dramatic. That wasn't a coast through 3-0-1 road trip, but they managed to pile up one off the max for a total and pretty much cemented their playoff position as far as getting into the Western Conference postseason.
Yeah, it was a great road trip. There's no real way to kind of parse it in a different light. It was just a fantastic road trip for the Golden Knights. Obviously, you get the job done in St. Louis. You have a lead for the majority of the night in Nashville, but their stars find a way in the third period. You still get a point out of that game with Jiří Patera in back-to-back situation. And then you go out there and you win a third period against the Winnipeg Jets, and you do the same in Minnesota and score an empty netter. Jonathan Marchessault is a 40-goal guy in the National Hockey League. Like, there's so much to love about what the Golden Knights were able to accomplish over these four games.
First time since 2003 that a National Hockey League player has scored an overtime goal on an empty net. It's happened a handful of times over the history of the NHL. The first occasion, you know when the first time it happened? Like, just take a crazy guess. The first time that a player scored an empty net goal in overtime. Because this one surprised me.
I believe I have the answer.
What is it?
It was in 1989, Maple Leafs pulled Alan Bester at the end of overtime in St. Louis, only to see Gino Cavallini pot the winner. It was the first overtime empty net goal in over 70 years of NHL history. We wouldn't see it again until the very next day when Mario Lemieux did it against the Flyers.
Okay. You're wrong. And what surprises me about you being so confident was you what you read told you you were wrong.
Told you that you were wrong.
In over 70 years of NHL history. It says
yes.
In over 70 years. Not like
it was in 1989.
It wasn't the first time.
Okay.
It was in
okay,
over
so it was,
70
it was,
years.
So Darren, I'm gonna take a stab at this.
Thank you.
I'm gonna just say it's 1919.
1932.
1932.
Yeah, 1932, and then it happened again in 1989. So there you get the 70 years.
That's not 70
That's
years.
That's not 70 years.
1989, 1932.
That's only 57 years.
That's what the NHL sent me. So I'm going with them, not with Chris Chapman.
I got mine from The Athletic. I'm going to trust The Athletic.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
Even out of that.
I don't know that you're going to trust them over the actual National Hockey League, Chapman.
NHL Stats sent me that because I was curious. How often? I thought it was going to be less than 5 occasions that a player had scored an empty net goal in overtime. But the first time was 1932. Cecil Dillon did it.
Sure.
In case you're wondering. Did you guys have Cecil?
Yeah, 100%.
Okay, he scored for the Rangers against the Boston Bruins. It would have been pretty easy to pick the six teams. You had a good chance to pick who was involved in that one back in 1932. And then it was 1989 when Gino did it for the St. Louis Blues. Other players to score an empty net goal in overtime: Mario Lemieux, Mike Ridley, Rem Murray, played for Edmonton, and Andrew Castles. Mm. So just like a little porridge of names. Names that we're familiar with in following the National Hockey League, Mario being the most prominent, if you don't count Cecil. But, yeah, Mike Ridley was a good player, came out of the Canadian college system. Rem Murray was a really long pro. Andrew Castles was a great great guy, and Gino was really good with the St. Louis Blues. So you had to be good to be on in overtime, right?
Sure, 100%.
So, but then to score the empty net, I loved the way that Marchessault did it too from his own end, and he joked he joked after about being on the PK. That was the other one.
Yeah, yeah. I mean now you can't take him off the ice in that situation. What are you talking about?
No. And here's the other thing, you get a plus for that.
Yeah.
So that's the best part. I mean, most times if you score a shorthanded goal, you get a plus. The other team gets a minus. You don't get a plus if you score on the power play because you've got the added advantage. But if it's the reverse, you get a plus. So everything's coming up roses for Jonathan Marchessault. Now, Chapman.
Yes.
I know you're digging. You're trying to justify how you arrived at this.
No, but listen.
What's your little comeback?
No, I got it from The Athletic. So, you know, if they're I consider them a trusted source. So the fact that their guy got it wrong, you know, that's frustrating. But
who's the guy?
I'm not going to call him out. So listen. If you're so interested to find it, you could go find it. I'm not gonna put the guy on the spot.
But, willing to throw the publication under the bus.
Well, but yeah. So
stop short
so
of names.
He also put this little tidbit in some of the overtime. So the Edmonton one in 2000, Rem Murray. That was the first time that loser points were involved, and Andrew Castles, who scored the winner in the 2003 game, he scored the goal in 2000 to send the game to overtime.
What?
Was this going to be catching up with Chapman?
No, it was not. No, I have something else. But
okay. One game happened. Rem Murray scored in 2000.
Yes,
and then Andrew Castles scored in 2003.
Yes,
but Castles had scored to give Murray the opportunity
right
back in 2000.
In 2000.
Okay. That's a weird connection.
And Vincent Dampoos was on.
Dampoos
was on the losing team in 1990 and 1993.
Okay, say his name again.
Dampoos.
Oh, there we go.
No,
he was on he was on the losing team in 89 and 93.
Really? You know what my nickname for Dampoos was?
Oh. No.
Wet Shack. Because Damp House is how it's spelled. It's pronounced Dampoos, but it's Damp House. I always called him Vincent Wet Shack.
Wow.
You follow me there?
I think it's better than Dampoos.
Dampoos. So this is the overtime, by the way. It existed from 1917 to 1942. And then overtime was reintroduced in 1983. And then, as Chapman so eloquently relayed, the loser point was brought in 1999-2000. It feels like, to me, as somebody that's been around the game a long time, it still feels like overtime is a newer thing, but it's more 3-on-3, and even that has been around for a while. I always think, boy, overtime hasn't been around that long. And then you go 1983-84. Like, who was great in 1983-84? It was the Oilers, it was the Islanders, it was the Boston Bruins, who were like just on fire during that stretch of time. There was some really good teams, but that was a long time ago. So long that neither one of you guys existed, right?
Yeah, I wasn't born yet.
No.
Yeah. So that makes sense that you guys would not be as
overtime has been around my entire life.
Your entire life.
Yeah.
But 3-on-3 hasn't.
No, it has not.
No, it started as like even, and then it went to 4-on-4, and then it went to 3-on-3.
Yep.
One of the best decisions the NHL's ever gone down, right? Like that path of one, because too many games were just ending in ties.
Sure.
So you go 4-on-4, and then 3-on-3. 3-on-3, that is one of the more dramatic changes the NHL has ever instituted as far as changing its game without changing its game. It's really a fan tweak.
It's a fan tweak that gives you the opportunity of allowing teams, even in a 3-on-3 setting, even in a more specialized skill set type of performance type of game, to find a way to end this game, right? Like before you get to a pure on skills competition, you at least still have the team aspect that leads to entertaining hockey. When both teams are trying to win the game, it leads to entertaining hockey.
What's a bigger change? I'm really curious about this. Was going to a shootout after overtime a bigger change than the NHL getting all the way down to 3-on-3? I've got my opinion, but I'm really curious about your take.
I think going to 3-on-3 was a bigger change than implementing the shootout. I think implementing the shootout was just kind of the natural progression of things. If you want to have a winner in every scenario, how do you end a game? You end it with a shootout. But allowing yourself to go from 5-on-5 to 4-on-4 and then taking that leap to 3-on-3, which is something you don't really ever see in the run of regular gameplay. It's possible, but you don't see it very often. I think that was a big leap by the National Hockey League to make the game a little bit more fun, to give you that carrot after 60 minutes. And to me, that's the biggest change.
The shootout is just purely to make it a 3-point game, to give somebody 2 points walking out. And nobody, the old argument that ties are boring, there's something to be said for that. But I do believe that there's moments where teams deserve to walk out of that rink with a tie because they both put everything into it. And the idea that sometimes there is a losing team in a regulation game when it's been a great game is kind of unfair. But I think it's been a real sense of forward thinking to get to the point where you can give every game a winner and every game a loser, even if there's a consolation point. I also believe at some point we are going to get to a stage where every game is worth 3 points. That means if you win in regulation, you get 3 points instead of two. Much like what they do in football in the Premiership, you get 3 points for a win. To make it the same for whether you win in regulation or whether it's an overtime result and you divide up those 3 points, I think we'll get there at some stage. There's the traditionalists that don't want it because they believe it's going to skew the all-time records for most points in a season, like what Boston did last year, even with this system. But that's already, to me, that's already been changed because you've added in overtime and a loser point in overtime or a shootout. So I don't know why we haven't gone there yet, but I think we will get there at some point.
Relatively soon, you think?
What soon? In
5 years?
Soon in hockey? That's very fair. Different than
that's fair. That's very fair
in everyday life or in other areas.
Okay, I'll say the next 5 to 8 years because that is soon in hockey terms.
Yeah, I don't think we get there in 5 years. There's just not enough of a push right now. But I do love that they had the just forward idea of if you pull your goalie you forfeit that loser point. That was a that was great, just institute of rules. Otherwise, why wouldn't more teams do it, right? Why, even 4-on-4, 5-on-5, why wouldn't more teams have done it? And I think I am hoping that down the stretch drive we'll see this more often. Like, it's been 20 years, a long time, since we've we've seen this where somebody's scored into an empty net in overtime. Minnesota's done it twice this year. I hope more teams will gamble with it next year, because the 4-on-3 power play, as much as it backfired the other night, it can be really effective, and it took a really good opportunity and execution by Marchessault.
So for me, I would love to see a scenario where if you pull your goaltender in overtime, you score, you convert, you get that goal, beyond just getting 2 points, you should get the point that the opposition acquired to get to overtime. Like, that to me needs to be incentivized in some way beyond just penalizing a team. Essentially, like, if you're the Minnesota Wild,
so you get it all.
Yeah, you get it all. It's all or
you
nothing,
walk out with
right?
3 points.
So, yeah, exactly. Because to me, that's the reason you do it. The reason you do it isn't necessarily because you need 2 points. That's true in regulation. Why wouldn't John Hines pull his goaltender in regulation? Right, like, you can't have the Golden Knights get points.
Inspire teams to do it maybe in December or January.
Sure,
looking for a spark. Are you really good? I don't mind that at all.
That's what I'd like to see happen, because that to me incentivizes teams a little bit more to go out there, pull their goaltender in a good spot when they've got zone time to make it a 4-on-3. And if you score, because you're assuming all that risk, you get both points. Mm-hmm. The opposition gets no points, and it is what it is.
You got to get players out there who are just dog on a bone too. Because if you ever come close to turning it over, you got to do whatever you can, whether it's taking a penalty or being desperate to get that puck back. And with the way they switch ends, because there was a time when they wouldn't switch ends in overtime. The players would defend the same end that they defended in the third period. But the National Hockey League, again, one of those, this more subtle, changes that didn't really change the game, like you wouldn't really notice, but it does change the game. When you go to the other end and make that a long change, and you pull your goaltender and have a 4-on-3, it makes it really difficult for that defending team to do it. I think we're onto something here, and I like that idea. I don't know whether that will happen in my lifetime.
Right.
Not that I'm going anywhere anytime soon, but
you're esteemed. You can't go anywhere.
Yeah, the last couple of years with my issues, who knows? I like that way of thinking, Ryan. That's really good brainstorming. I like what we've done here, and we can.
Yeah, I think
Vincent Dampoos for that.
Yep, there it is.
Yeah. By the way, I did some research on this. This empty net
goal. I'm shocked that you spent this entire time trying to come up with a way to defend
yourself. So it's like crap. The empty net goal is crap, and here's why. The game took place on January 12th, 1932. The game ended 3-3 in regulation, but in overtime, every goal counted in the 10-minute period. The game should have ended at 4:46 of overtime when Cecil Dillon scored on the goalie.
Yeah.
He scored on the goalie, but they kept playing. The Bruins coach, who was Art Ross at the time, pulled his goalie, Tiny Thompson, and then
Tiny was good too.
Cecil Dillon scored an empty net goal after the game should have ended. It's crap. It shouldn't count. It has an asterisk.
It wasn't sudden death overtime.
No, it has an asterisk next to it.
It's not an asterisk if that's how it was played at the time.
No, because the game was over. It should have been over.
But it wasn't, because sudden death overtime.
It doesn't matter. Was it
an empty net goal in overtime?
After the game should have been over.
Excuse me. Was it an empty net goal in overtime?
Technically, yes.
Permission, Ryan, permission to treat the witness as hostile.
Yes.
Listen, it's a bunch
answer
of crap.
The question, or
I
you
did.
Will face
I did. I said technically yes, it is.
Oh.
But it's a goofy rule that existed in 1932 that doesn't exist today.
1932. We're coming up in 100 years from that.
Hmm.
And in 100 years from now, they're going to say this Chapman guy was arguing.
Yeah, I'm on Gino Cavallari's side here.
Cavallari.
Same difference.
This is not nice, your finest segment, buddy.
Nice Sicilian last name.
Okay, what did you call Vincent?
Damfus?
No, you didn't.
I don't know. You said Vincent Damfus.
Damfus and Cavallari.
No, not Cavallari. Cavallari.
Cavallari.
Yeah.
Oh, jeez.
I got Art Ross's name right.
Yes, yeah, well, because he's got a trophy.
Well done. Well done there, Chapman.
2 one-syllable names. You nailed those, didn't you?
Yes. By the way, a guy named Art Chapman scored in that game.
Seriously? Huh.
Yeah, Art
Any
Chapman.
Relation?
Not to my knowledge. Not to my knowledge.
Well, while we do the game rating, you can check it out.
He is from Winnipeg, by the way.
Most great people are. Let's get into our game rating from Saturday's big win over the Minnesota Wild.
To alcohol, the cause of and solution to all of life's problems.
Yeah! See, I don't even try to pick on Chapman. It just happens organically.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Just people give me a hard time about picking on him, and I feel that I get a bit of a raw deal.
I think most people would agree with me.
To be fair, no, not in this scenario. You have mangled two names, and you're mad about what the rules were at the time in 1932.
No,
like,
there's an asterisk next to it.
No, it's there isn't.
It
there
shouldn't
isn't
have counted
because it didn't. Because the rules at the time were such that the game continued.
But it shouldn't have counted. Game was over.
Okay.
And now you're sending us texts. Yeah. While talking to us about this.
No, I sent you the text before I turned the mic on.
Like, I'm going to argue with you.
Yes. I'm
you
giving
be
you a
ready.
Heads up.
Good on you for going down the asterisk line of usage, too, because that's one of the most difficult words for me to say. So I give you credit. Big kudos for that. What's your game rating for Saturday?
I'm going to go 5. I'm going with a Dom P. Look, it was the end of a road trip. Would have been easy for them to lose focus after coming back and beating the Jets the other night. Look, they were down 1-0 in the game. I really thought Michael Amadio's goal was incredible. Just a great play, like transition. That's Golden Knights hockey. And then look, you essentially ended the Minnesota Wild season. For all intents and purposes, it's done. They're it's over for them. So you rip their hearts out in front of their home fans. You won the third game, or you won 3 games on this road trip. It was a great ending to a great road trip. I can't go anywhere else other than a 5. Dom P.
Nice. Brian?
Yeah, it's Dom P for me. Jonathan Marchessault is a 40-goal guy. William Karlsson, another fantastic performance from him. You mentioned the Amadio goal, but it's that stretch pass from Martinez, a great backhand pass from Stevenson to set up that goal. And, you know, the Golden Knights' push in the third period was really, really strong. They didn't give up much in the third period of the Minnesota Wild, really at all. And you mentioned it. You go 3-0-1 on a 4-game road trip against teams that are either directly above you or directly behind you in the standings, and you take 7 out of 8 points. You can't be mad at it. Obviously, you know, the Jack Eichel penalty was a big point in the game, and I know the Golden Knights penalty kill surrendered a goal on that 5-minute major, but the fact that it was just a goal, I still believe that Vegas was able to get a boost. It wasn't as bad as it could have been in that moment, and there was belief and an ability to deal with some adversity and come out resilient on the other side. It's a 5 out of 5 for me.
I'll go 5 out of 5 as well with a toast of champagne. I loved what they did. The 3-1 at home on the homestand before they went out on their journeys, that was needed. That was must have. You had to pile up some points during that. And then you wondered how much could you carry over. And to be able to walk back at the T-Mobile tomorrow night with 7 of possible 8 points on the last week's worth of work, That's a statement. If you were wondering, and you're from Edmonton or Boston or Toronto or Florida, what are the Golden Knights going to be? You got your answer. They're in this thing to defend and not just squeak into the playoffs. And it was really impressive. And how they did it. I'll go back to the minimal time leading and how close the – and we'll give you the numbers tomorrow night on the television pregame show, more in percentages. But 7 of 8 games, if you take out empty netters, 7 out of the last 8 games were one-goal games. It was that close. And I think empty net goals are as valuable as others because of what they do. Do you tell me how much you relax after you score an empty net goal? It's huge to be able to put it away. But they were just coming up that just a little bit better than everybody else through the last 2 weeks. And it was capped off in fantastic fashion with the great third period against Winnipeg. And then the rally against the Minnesota Wild, and you're kind of getting that confidence back, right? That things are going in the right direction. A few weeks ago, when Vancouver was in here, it was a close game. It was an empty net game, but Vegas didn't have control of the game. You didn't feel like they were as dangerous as they are now. Putting people back in and having people in different spots certainly adds to that. And I'm not sure I'm going to call it swagger because I'm not sure this team necessarily, like, they don't have the traditional swagger, but they have just a confidence level that is reminiscent of what we saw the last year.
Yeah, I think confidence is the right way to put it. Obviously, there's confidence emanating, oozing out of Logan Thompson. He has been so good in his recent run of games. But, you know, beyond just Logan and his rate of play, like, the Golden Knights believe, as they should, that if they play kind of to their identity, and they have over the last 11 games or so, that they can find that play in the run of a game, in the run of, you know, whatever you need to do. It's whether it's a big save or it's finding a goal or making a play to deliver an empty net overtime game-winning goal. The Golden Knights are coming up more and more on the right side of those plays that determine games. And that's what good teams do. That's what great teams do. They make plays, they find ways, and the Golden Knights are right back to being that team that does that predominantly every single game that they play.
Logan Thompson's given this team an option too. He entered the season as the backup. His numbers, he's played more, but his numbers are really good, wins, loss, and his save percentage and his goals against average, right there with Aiden Hill. He's given this team an option, and the last 5 games has been spectacular. You don't get a better 5 games unless you're Brian Boucher shutting out everybody for 5 straight games, which he did. Hey, I'm going to call an audible here. Can we take a break and we'll come back with Bruce and then shorten one-timers? Can we do that? Because I still want to get Bruce in.
Yeah, we can do that.
Let's do that. And then Chapman will come up with another reason why he's right, and he'll fire it and try to sell it to us. And you, the audience, can let us know on the text line. It's the VGK Insider Show on Fox Sports Las Vegas. Slided some tidbits from around the National Hockey League, including some original six history that has just occurred this evening. But first, want to bring you Bruce Cassidy's availability from today, which centered on the outset on the appearance of Tomas Hertl with his first team practice with the Vegas Golden Knights, skating in a red sweater.
Yeah, it's important for him to get around his teammates in that type of environment. He's been skating on his own here a little bit. We were away, so like I said, I think it's great for him to start interacting, see what it looks like, how we practice. I mean, you can't tell everything in a lot, but like I said, it's just being in the room at the same time. He's usually, you're skating by yourself, you're dressing early. It's a bit of a lonely life sometimes, you know, so this is good for him. And obviously getting closer, right? I don't know when he'll play. He's not playing tomorrow. He's still in a red, so we'll see how that progresses.
How much do you evaluate, and I know it's just his first day, but even before a player comes back and starting
to bring it back? Well, there's going to be rust. We know that. So I wouldn't say there's a whole lot. We just want to get him some games, whenever that is, so he can get up to speed and help the team win, right? So then we'll, after he gets a few under his belt, then we'll probably look, okay, where does he best fit, right? And that might sort itself out right away. It might take time. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. But, I mean, we know what his game is. He's been in the league a long time. But how does it complement the center ice when he's playing with is what the first thing we're going to try to get to the bottom of, because, you know, there's only 8 games left. It's not tomorrow, 7. So he's not going to have a lot of time, unfortunately. But that's what it is. And again, a guy that's been in the league that long, that has a good hockey IQ, I'm sure he'll sort his way through in a hurry, too.
Did you say did you expect to start on the wing? I guess that is the way you said center ice.
Well, right now, I think it would be easier to come in and play the wing than center in our system and being out that long. So that's probably where he would start. Doesn't mean he'll finish there, maybe not even finish the game there. And then it will depend on health. Right now, we have 4 centermen that we typically play. Howie's played a lot of center too, healthy. So that would probably be the way we'd start. I'll have a discussion with him on that very soon on how he feels about that. Not much to report there. Neither one will be ready tomorrow. Will left the trip. He's day to day. Until they get with the team, there's not much we can say there. I don't know. I don't have the answer to that. That'll be up to the medical team.
If the goals against him, obviously, gone were really good in on that road trip, and you guys aren't allowing many chances, how close does it feel to where you want the game to be going to the playoffs? Like, how much room is there?
Well, a lot closer than it was a month ago, so let's keep it going. I think there's been a stretch now, so that's not, it wasn't just luck for a week, right? I thought at home we did it. We did it on the road for the most part. I know the Nashville game got away, but I don't, as I said there, I didn't feel it was chance after chance. They were opportunistic. They buried some of their top players, so give them credit. But I like where it's going, and we're not stuck in our end for long stretches. We're managing the puck better between the blue lines. Actually, in Minnesota, it was maybe the low zone plays, we tried to force a few plays that came back at us that gave them some odd man rushes. And they made a nice play in the power play. But all in all, like I said, I really liked how it's supposed to look in terms of limiting zone time too. That means we're closing quicker. It also means we're getting the pucks. We're rebounding pucks better ourselves in our end and getting it and moving it up ice and being cleaner in that area as well.
Logan had those couple weeks off since he's come back. Obviously, the numbers speak for themselves. What did you see when he came back? What kind of game did you see since?
I don't know that his game changes a lot. I think, you know, to me, I always look, is he in control? Is, you know, when you're watching the game after, are there, after the first save, is he back there, get ready to make the second one, or is the rebound getting to the right spot? So I think rebound control is one thing I think has been better. And as I said, maybe that's because we're helping him more with that as well. But he's just right now, he's a confident goalie. And I think what he's seeing is what he's used to, where the team's playing better in front of him, but is always going to have some breakdowns. That's human nature. That's a game of mistakes. And he's prepared now to make those timely saves. And it's not one after another. So I think we're better in front of him. And as a result, he has to not quite do as much. So he's a little bit sharper, less fatigue, whatever word you want to do to be able to make those saves. So, and sometimes there's a bit of luck involved, right? Like there's some games they'll hit a couple posts and could make the difference in the game. And the next time it's posting in, this time it's posting out. So those go into those short, but now it's not getting short anymore. It's a lot of games he's strung together. So I think our puck luck has been better, period, as a team. Winnipeg the other night made a good play and they missed a good chance, Ehlers, right? That maybe a month ago goes in, they bury that. So that could end up swinging the game. So there's a little bit of that going on. Usually when you start winning a little more, you're usually getting a few breaks along the way. And I think we've earned them, but we've gotten more than we did, say, a month ago when it seemed like a lot of those pucks were finding their way in. And that happens to goalies too. So he's playing well. We're playing well. We're getting a few breaks. It all adds up to low numbers. But the numbers do speak for themselves in terms of chances against. We are better. So that's going to reflect in the goaltenders has less to do too, and that's the way they'd want it.
The last couple of weeks, it's been like maybe like 4 or 5 minute difference between Michael and Carlson's ice time. Is that where you want it? Is that too much?
Probably. Probably too much. I would say Jack, if I'm going by last year, Jack was probably, 19? Carly, 16 and a half? Maybe. So that's, I was good in math as a kid, so let's see if I am as an adult. It's like 2.5 to 3 minutes, so if it's five, it's probably too much. Jack kills penalties more this year, so that's naturally going to bump it up. He didn't do much of that last year. So five's probably too much, but it's going to be more than it was last year, if that answers the question.
Length matters in that?
Yeah. Carly's pretty – they're both responsible players. Jack, he might stay longer than Carly at times. And then power play, Jack will usually stay a little longer. So there's always a little bit there that – they both play in overtime a lot, so it's not overtime. It's probably mostly PK and then a little extended on the power play. Are we chasing the game or not? If we're chasing the game, sometimes Jack's line will be out there a little more because they're offensively our top line in terms of producing. So that could be another reason.
You were talking about results were more important than the process for a couple weeks ago. When did you see those kind of come together?
Well, I think they are the last little bit, and they usually do anyway. We were prioritizing points, right? It was just the position we were in, and we can't afford to sit here and say, well, boy, we played well and lost. Boy, we played well and got a point. Like, we needed wins, right? We got those, but they usually go hand in hand. If you're playing well, that's how you win. So I think the process and the results end up, they're always gonna intersect at some point. It's just inevitable. Unless you're a team that started the year and say, we're playing all our young guys, that's the process. They're going to learn and they're going to be better in March than they were in October, but we're probably still a ways away. There's teams that go through that in this league, and we're not one of them. We want to be better in March than we are in October. We want to be accumulating points all along, and we don't walk away from a game and say, boy, this kid got a little bit better today. He'll be better off for it in 3 years. That's not our MO. So, I don't know if that answers your question, but to me, any good team, the process will always lead to wins. And so they're always, you know, there at the end of the day. I think what you look at, Darren, is there's parts of the season where when you're playing well and not getting points because of puck luck, you're not going to panic. You're like, well, we're playing the right way. It's just not going our way right now. It'll go our way. Whereas later in the year, if you're in a position for whatever reason, then it's we got to get our win. So you may have to overplay a Jack a few extra minutes. That's where that might come in, or you might use a certain goalie a little more than maybe you would earlier in the year. And that's just a little bit of where you are in the standings from year to year.
Carlson left corner, centered, one-timer, score!
It's time for One-Timers. One-Timers. A quick look at news and notes from around the National Hockey League. Brought to you by Paul Padilaw. It's not about the injury, it's about the recovery.
I'm going to admit it right now, that scared me. Coming out of that, I was all set to say something, and then the one-timer opening comes in. Thanks to Bruce Cassidy for breaking that out. The process versus the results, really strikes home where they are right now with the process, the way they're winning this last little bit. Not just outscoring mistakes, but really locking it down defensively. Stanley Cup clinching scenarios. Toronto can clinch tonight with a win over Florida, and then a whole bunch of other things can happen. I'm not going to get into the details, but looks like they're going to beat the Florida Panthers. They're up big on that game. And we have Austin Matthews scoring his 61st goal of the year. Maple Leaf record. Mm-hmm. So some real significance there. Some people were talking 70 earlier. That always becomes a challenge, but he deserves to be in an MVP conversation. I just don't know whether he's going to be there. The Art Ross race for most points in the season. All three guys are playing tonight. McKinnon, McDavid, and Kucherov. And I think those will be your three MVP candidates by the time everything's said and done. And I'm on record. Kucherov should win it because he's got 40 more points than anybody else on his team.
I don't disagree with you. Kucherov has been phenomenal this year. I think that if you look at value, he's the guy. So I'm with you.
McDavid, one of the greatest rallies I've seen since Mario Lemieux. And he was battling Hodgkin's disease, lymphoma, when he came back, which made it even more sensational and chased down Wayne Gretzky and everybody else in the 80s. But this has been pretty remarkable out of Connor McDavid. We just hold him to such a high bar that just squeaking out a win isn't McDavid. He should never be punished for that, for not being considered because he wins the point total, but we'll see. And there's an e-bug tonight that is dressing for the Tampa Bay Lightning. Jonas Johansson is not able to go, although he's going to play on Thursday, which is kind of strange that he can't back up tonight, but he's going to play on Thursday. But we got an e-bug playing for the Tampa Bay Lightning tonight, so we'll keep an eye on whether Andre Vasilevsky never comes out. So that's probably the safest bet that the e-bug's not going to get any time in the game.
Yeah, probably not. That one's 1-1 going to the third period. So
some big games, some swing games on April. Did you guys do anything for April Fools?
Do you do stuff for April Fools? I'm not a big April. No, I don't do that.
Chapman
apparently.
I have in
does
the past. We've been
a
through
lot
it,
of pranking,
and I've been called a horrible person on the text line for some of the things that I've
yes
done.
Really?
Yes. Yeah, James Dow says I'm horrible. My mom was so proud of me, and I took advantage.
Mm-hmm. You don't prank mom.
Well, I did.
Oof. You don't prank mom.
I agree.
We'll be back with Catching Up with Chapman right after this.
When the guy wouldn't stop talking, we had no choice but to give him his own segment. It's time for Catching Up with Chapman.
Oh, Christopher.
Hi, Darren. So you were kind of asking about April Fools in the last segment, and April 1st is a significant day for me, not because it's April Fool's Day, but 25 years ago today, I moved to Las Vegas. I moved from Phoenix, Arizona. I lived in Phoenix for 2 years after growing up in New Jersey, but I've left Las Vegas a few times, but I've always managed to come back, and you know, a lot of significant things in my life have happened in this city, so for that reason, I will always call it home, despite the fact that I was born and raised in the Garden State. Vegas is my home. When I lived overseas, I told people I was from Vegas. I didn't say I'm from New Jersey originally, but yeah, I would tell people I was from Las Vegas, and even when I travel overseas, I tell people I'm from Las Vegas. So 25 years, it's a long time to live in one city for me, and you know, A lot of really significant things in my life have happened here, so it's cool to be a resident of Vegas. I even got a nice little tweet from the city of Las Vegas. They replied to my tweet saying, the city's better having you here. I don't know if that's the case, but I like it. It was nice.
Was this a long story to say that the city of Las Vegas?
No. It was just saying that, you know, today's my 25th anniversary of being a Las Vegas resident.
Did you include the city of Las Vegas?
No. Tweet? I didn't tag them or anything.
No. Oh, good for you then.
Yeah. They don't follow me or anything, but cool. They should follow
me. How many different places have you lived in Vegas?
Oh, God. A lot. When I first moved here, I lived on DI in Hualapa. And that was basically the edge of town. Like, there was no Red Rock, nothing. No Red Rock Casino, I should say. There was nothing. Everything was empty. Like, there was no 215. Like,
really?
Yeah. Like, Hualapa and Desert Inn, that was the end of town. Mm-hmm. There was, I think, Boca Park had just opened when I moved here. And, like, it didn't have any of the cool stuff like Kona Grill. It just had the Target at a couple of other stores in that strip mall. But, yeah, there... It's changed a lot in 25 years.
Like 10 places, 15 places?
No, it was a pretty big strip mall.
How many places have you lived?
Oh, probably 9 or 10.
Yeah.
I've moved around a bit.
Always
on the west side.
You think, okay, I'm here for a while, and all of a sudden you've lived in 3 places since then.
Yeah.
It's weird.
Hey, my favorite was I lived in Sun City, Summerlin for a little bit.
Really?
Yes. Another story for another time.
How does that work?
I'll tell you later.
I want to know now.
We got 7 seconds.
How fast can you tell it?
Not fast enough.
You guys are great.